Good morning, Shabbat Shalom, and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study coming to you live from St. Francisville, Louisiana. It's good to be here today, and it's good that you're here today. Thank you so very much for joining us. We are presently in our ongoing study, working through the Pentateuch, the five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, according to the ancient Babylonian system of readings, the annual cycle of Parashot. Now, I've mentioned this before, that according to the Talmud and other sources, in antiquity, there were two basic methods whereby you would complete the reading or the study of these five books. One was in the land of Israel, Eretz Israel. That particular reading cycle took 3 to 3.5 years, depending, whereby about 21 verses from the Pentateuch was studied and read in the synagogue on the Sabbath. The other cycle of readings comes from a little bit later period, and it's from Babylon. We're going with that one because I felt led to work from the text of the Pentateuch, and I felt like we could work through very carefully, closely, working through the text, and we could do that in a year's time. Now, I've been getting some emails and correspondence where people are asking, just tell us, you know, you're going through all these examples. Where are we going with this? Well, I'll tell you where we're going with this. One of the things that is very important, I believe, is to identify the underlying structure, the underlying sources that come together to make this book that we all know, love, and seek to live our lives by. So it's very important for me to recognize and identify what we might call the edges, where these various documents, these ancient stories come together. Let me give you an example. Last week, we concluded a particular series, a mini-series within the broader series about the life of Abraham. And I told you, if you think about it, Abraham lives to be 175 years. But when you really look at what the Bible tells us about Abraham, it's minimal. I mean, think about it. Of 175-year life, let's say you live to be 175, and you're asked, what two chapters or what 14 chapters of your 175-year life would you like to see in print for the ages? You know, that's what I want you to understand, is that these people that we encounter, these faithful founders, if you will, of the faith, you know, what do we really know about them? So we are now moving forward in our particular study. We concluded the three-part series from what I told you was part of an ancient story called Ele Toledot Terach. These are the bringings forth, plural, of Terach, or translated most commonly in English, these are the generations of Terach. And that particular ancient section is used by the compiler of Genesis so that we get the story of Abraham smack in the middle, right? So it begins in, if you recall, this particular Ele Toledot Terach begins in chapter 11, verse 27 of Genesis with the birth of Abraham, or the birth of Abram, I should say. And the story concludes in Genesis chapter 25, verse 11 with the death of Abraham. So between those two sections, we get this source within the source, or a source within the book of Genesis. Now, this week, we're in the seventh class in our journey through the five books. So this is class number 7. We did an introduction, and then we followed the annual cycle of readings each week for the last 6 weeks past. And so you can go back if you're new here, if you've just joined us this morning, then please go back in your spare time and watch all of those. They're usually about an hour long, but hey, I know people are used to binging on Netflix, so why not put something wholesome in your mind? We are following the focus that the compiler, the person who pulled these ancient stories together, wants us to follow. So we just finished Abraham. Where are we now? Well, most of you know by reading and studying and seeking to live your life according to these sacred histories, know that now, if we had to bet, I would bet that we're going to shift our focus to Isaac. Now, we've already met Isaac. We know Isaac from earlier classes, but now the focus is going to really come in on Isaac, okay? Now, we met Isaac, and we really got to know him in chapter 22 of Genesis, where Abraham is told, take now, this is typical English, average, I'm doing sort of a composite from memory, probably a little heavy on the King James, because it's what I grew up with. Take now thine son, thine only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go offer him for a, in Hebrew it says an olah, a burnt offering. Remember that story. Now, Isaac is not a little boy. We talked about that. That's where we meet Isaac. Now, this particular section, we're going to really look a little bit more into Isaac. Now, I'm going to cover this more in detail, but Isaac lives 180 years. So how much do we really know about Isaac? And the truth is we don't know much, but we're going to look at it. So this particular story, just like that one was called in Hebrew, Eli Toledot Terach, and it focused on Abraham. Remember, Terach is his father. Now we're focused on Eli Toledot Isaac. Now that one begins, this is, by the way, one of 10 of these ancient stories within the story. We have in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 4, these are the generations, or these are the bringings forth, as Dr. Tabor translates. These are the bringings forth of the heavens and the earth, or the skies and the land in the day that God made them. Then we go to Genesis chapter 6 and Genesis chapter 5, where it's the Eli Toledot Adam. Then Genesis chapter 6 and verse 9 is Eli Toledot Noah. Then we get to chapter 10 and verse 1. These are the sons of Noah. The generations are the bringings forth of sons of Noah. So you see, you follow creation of the heavens and the earth. Then you get Adam. Then you get Noah. Then you get the sons of Noah. And then the next one after that is Shem, chapter 11 and verse 10. You just work your way down. Where is it that our focus is being drawn? You see, it's a great story. I tell people all the time, even if you don't believe the Bible, read the stories. It's the most fascinating piece of ancient literature. It's still a top seller. It sells a lot more than the Moses scroll, I can tell you that. But it's a beautiful story. And stories within the stories. We're looking for the seams where these stories connect. So once you get to the line of Shem, then we're directed to the one we just completed, Eli Toledot Terach. Now, and by the way, in the middle of Eli Toledot Terach and the one we're starting now about Isaac, was a very quick, just a few verses about these are the generations of Ishmael. So we're working our way through. The compiler, the person who you could call it divine redaction, if you will, the person who's responsible to pull these stories together is taking all these ancient stories and putting them together for us in this beautiful tapestry of theological stories, I guess you could say. So our story today begins. I want you to go with me to chapter 25. And verse 19, I want to put the parameters up. I want to put the parameters up for this new book within the book of Genesis. Most people don't notice that it's a book of books. In fact, the word Bible, right? What does it mean? It basically means books. Biblos is, we're talking about books. So we have a book within books within books within books. And even Genesis has come to us with a lot of books within it. So look at Genesis 25. In verse 19, and as I've done in the last few classes, when I need to go very literal, I'm clearly going to use Dr. Tabor's translation, which you can find on Amazon, the Transparent English Bible. But I'm using, for the most part, either the JPS or I'll translate from the Hebrew as I go. This is the JPS. Don't lean too closely to this translation. It's not so hot. But Genesis 25:19. This is the story of Isaac, it says. Ele toledot Yitzhak. These are the bringings forth of Isaac, son of Abraham. Abraham begot Isaac. All right? So it begins at a white space. Now, remember, I've mentioned this in many, many classes. The Hebrew doesn't follow chapter and verse divisions when it was originally composed. They didn't have chapter this, chapter that. We had these white spaces open and closed in the Hebrew text. This, right before I tell you, these are the generations or the bringings forth of Isaac, there's a space. Let you know, a new book is starting. Now, it goes all the way through chapter 26, all the way through 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35. Go with me to chapter 35 and verse 28. This is where I'm going to be focused for the next several weeks. It says in verse 28 of Genesis 35, Isaac was 180 years old. He breathed his last and died. He was gathered to his kin in ripe old age and was buried by his sons Esau and Jacob. Isn't that nice? You see the structure? So within the book of Genesis, it doesn't follow these ancient annual cycles either, nor does it follow the headings that your particular favorite Bible translator uses. It's a system that was designed in the beginning, and it runs from the birth of Isaac all the way through the very end where Isaac dies. Now, you're going to note, or if you remember from the last few weeks, the life of Abraham was part of this Eli Toledot Terach. It started with the birth of Abram and ended with the death of Abraham. The book of Isaac, let's call it the book of Isaac, if you will. The book of Isaac begins not with the birth of Isaac, but Isaac is 40 years old. His book begins when he's 40 years old. How do I know that? Because it says so. If you look at back at 25:19, this is the story of Isaac, the book of Isaac, the son of Abraham. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took to wife Rebekah, daughter of Betuel, the Aramean of Padan Aram. Now, it's a flashback, which I'll make clear in just a few minutes. So it begins when Isaac, the story kicks off. The ancient author wants us to know, and by the way, readers, Isaac is 40 years old. Now, he's talking about when Isaac took Rebekah. Now, we know that story. We already read that story. But it's brilliant the way this is placed together. It's like, let me give you a little more detail about that. Because when we read the story where Abraham sends his unnamed servant to get a woman for Isaac, we don't know how old anybody is, really. We can guess, but it's not told. But the author here of Eli Toledot Isaac wants us to know, that story you just learned, Isaac was 40. Okay? You follow me. Now, chapter 36, go back to the end of this book, the end of the book, Eli Toledot Isaac, and go to chapter, we just read chapter 35, verse 28 and 29, where Isaac dies. Now, look at verse 36. This begins a new book, Eli Toledot Esau. These are the bringings forth of Esau. So it covers Abraham, Isaac, now Esau. Now, in the middle of all of this, we begin to get Jacob. But we're going to get to Jacob's story in the place where the compiler wants us to focus on Jacob much later. And guess what? We're going to learn a lot more about Jacob than we do about most. But you know what the focus the compiler wants us to see, and we'll do more of this when we get there? It's about Joseph. The compiler wants you to know, when we talk about Jacob, I want you to look at Joseph. But that's for another week. All right. Now, if you look at chapter 36, I'm jumping ahead just to frame some things up for what I want to do over the next few weeks. Look down at verse 31 of chapter 36. These are the kings who reigned in the land of Edom before any king reigned over the Israelites. Now, I brought this up in a previous class. And then, by the way, after what I just read, it goes through and it lists some kings. This particular section could not have been written before there were kings in Israel, which is at the time of Saul. So Genesis has some later edits, and that's okay. A lot of people want to think a certain way that the Bible doesn't ask them to think. So the writer is here telling us, look, this happened. These are all the kings that bring us up to the time where Israel had a king. Well, Israel doesn't have a king until roughly 10th century BCE. It's telltale. The author wants us to know that. So we now know it. Thank you very much. But we're going to get to that as well. Now, back to where we are. Similar to what we read in Eile Toledot Terach, these are the bringings forth of Terach, which is primarily about Terach's son Abraham. We don't know a lot about Terach. All we know, basically, is what we get in the little bit at the end of Genesis chapter 11 and Joshua 24, where we read that Abraham and Terach and that family was a family of idolaters. And they leave, says Ur of the Chaldees, they're idolaters. But Abraham hears the call and comes to the land of Canaan. Just like Eile Toledot Terach deals with Abraham, primarily, even though it's named after his father, so the book of Isaac is really contains more about Jacob than it does about his father. The focus, right? We want to focus on Jacob. We really know very little about Isaac. He lives to be 180 years old. We see that most of his life, he's a marked man. He's different. Events happen to Isaac. You know, some people are movers and shakers like Abraham and Jacob. But when it comes to Isaac, life happens to Isaac. You know, they say that once he went to the altar, his life forever changed, as you can imagine. And we brought some of that up in the last few classes. But what we do have in terms of understanding the life of Isaac, it's important. And it's important for us to talk about, particularly in a book that's named after Isaac. So we have to know what we know. Of the 180 years, how much of Isaac's life are we given a window into? Now, one of the things that we learn, we see that Isaac's life in some ways follows the life of his father. So some of the things that happened to Abraham also happened to Isaac. Now, that's to be expected. You know, when you deal with a family who is settled in what we call the Negev, the southern desert region, you know, one thing that's probably going to show up in that story, no matter which year you zoom in on, disputes over wells. Have you ever been to the desert in Israel, or have you ever watched any documentaries or read any books? Water is important. So you're going to see disputes over wells with Abraham. And even this week in chapter 26 of Genesis, we deal with, at times, Isaac has to go redig the wells that have been stopped up by the, you know, previous people that have come through. You know, these fights over the water. And we also have Isaac, like his father, interestingly enough, and many people have pointed this out, there's a mirroring of some of the same behaviors. Remember, Abraham, on a couple of occasions, tells leadership of another group, this girl here, Sarah, that's my sister. Is that your wife? No, it's my sister. Right? We get that story. We get it in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 10, when Abraham goes to, or Abram at the time, goes to Egypt. He tells Sarai, look, when we meet these people, just tell them you're my sister, because if you tell them you're my wife, they're going to take you and, you know, off me or whatever. So that's the plan. They do that. And then when you get to chapter 20 of Genesis, Abraham and Sarah do it again. This time they do it to someone by the name of Avimelech, and he's got an assistant named Phicol. So Avimelech and Phicol, you know, they see Abraham and Sarah, and Abraham says, this is my sister. Now, some of the Jewish commentators say, you know, that's not a good thing. They don't excuse Abraham's behavior here. In fact, if you read Genesis 20, which we've covered, the thing that stands out is Avimelech is innocent in this. We have a tendency as Bible believers to do something that the Bible doesn't do. You ready for this? We make excuses for the characters, for the heroes. You know what the Bible doesn't do? Make excuses for the characters and the heroes. Avimelech says to God, I did this in innocence. I didn't know that she was another man's wife. They told me that was his sister. You know what God says? I know that. And because of your innocency, this is what I'm... See? But you know what we do? We, and that means commentators for the past thousands of years, we go in and we say, well, Abraham's not going to lie. It's like we do with George Washington in the U.S. or something. We tend to, or Paul Bunyan, we make these stories up around our heroes and our characters. You know, this person never told a lie. You know, this person, didn't, he chopped down the cherry tree. And is that true? I don't know. I don't know. But what I'm saying is that the Bible doesn't excuse. So I want you to keep that in mind, because I'm going to bring it back to you in just a few minutes. And some of you are going to try to make excuses for Jacob. And I'm going to tell you that's not allowed, because the Bible doesn't. Some of you try to make excuses for Sarah or for maybe Rebecca. Well, let's see how it goes. We're going to keep pushing through. But anyway, speaking of Avimelech and Phicol, guess who else meets Avimelech and Phicol? Isaac, in chapter 26, verse 6 through 11. He, too, encounters Avimelech and Phicol. All right? Now, we're going to see with Isaac that just like his father Abraham, these are almost motifs that show up in the stories of the patriarchal narratives. So you go, if I'm an ancient scribe and I'm going to write a story about Abraham, it's almost like I have a template. You ready for this? Okay, I'm going to have a dispute over a well. Check, got it. I'm going to have the patriarch say that the woman is his sister and not his wife. Check, got that. I'm going to have a woman who is infertile. I got it. And you write the story. Now get this. Let me explain that a little bit better. Imagine, if you will, God gives the promise that you're going to be, your seed is going to be more than the stars of the heaven, more than the sand of the sea, more than the dust of the earth. And you're Abraham and you don't have any children. And you're old. And your wife is barren. Well, that makes it a little more difficult, doesn't it? Well, we're going to see in the story of Isaac and Rebekah that that is repeated again. Now, here's the thing that I want you to see. It's as if the Bible wants us to recognize that this didn't just happen. It required the guiding hand of God to step in. It's one thing if you say, well, it's a young couple. Abraham and Sarah are in their 20s. You know, they're at the prime of their life and God calls them. That's too easy. They have to be old and they have to be barren. They're past it. And Sarah is beyond the days of women. She's not menstruating anymore. There's no way. And then God steps in. So you talk about miraculous birth. Some of the listeners are from a Christian background. You have a miraculous birth. You talk about miraculous birth. They're all through the five books, right? Let's talk miraculous birth. Okay. Now, so the women, another thing about the women when it comes to these patriarchal narratives, they're from the same family, the same area. Now, I've talked about whether that's Ur of the Chaldees or Padan Aram, Aram Naharaim. It's that land between the two rivers, right? Excuse me. Excuse me, a little dry throat. So these women are from the same. Now, there's something else about these women. It's the women in our stories that guide the plan. All right? The women in the story guide the plan. Even when the men would choose another path. Now, you're going to see this. Remember, Abraham says to God, just take Ishmael. You know, we already have Ishmael. Let's make him. And God tells him, we're going to do something with Ishmael too. But it's through Isaac. All right? Now, all throughout the Bible, the men, a lot of times, don't make the right decision. And all the women listeners are like, yeah, you're just now realizing this. So I'm telling them that the Bible is in agreement with them. You know, Isaac favors Esau, but Rebekah favors Jacob. She's right. Now, why is she right? What does she know? We're going to get into that. Isaac, let me tell you a little bit more about Isaac. Isaac, like his parents, or unlike his parents and his son Jacob, has no name change. Abram to Abraham, Sarai to Sarah. You have Jacob to Israel. Isaac is Isaac. His name doesn't change, nor does Rebekah's name. Isaac, unlike his parents and his children, has only one woman. Abraham has more than one woman. Not only does he have Hagar, but then he has Keturah. You know, some debate whether or not that's the same woman or not. That's up to you. You figure that out. But the idea, and then when you get to Jacob, not only does he have Rachel and Leah, but he has the handmaids too. All right, Zilpah and Bilhah. So we've got, but Isaac is just with Rebekah. Now, Isaac also lives longer than his father and his son. Some connect that with the fact that he only had one woman. You know, maybe his life was a little bit easier. I just wanted to even up the score there after the crack on the guys. But Isaac lives to be 180. Isaac lives to be 180. Abraham lives to be 175. And Jacob lives to be 147. And he later will say that the days of his life are few and bad. Right, so he has a tough 147 years. Isaac is the promised son. Isaac is the promised son. He's the one through whom the Goy Gadol, the great nation, will come. Now, I should clarify. Also through Esau, or through Ishmael, there's going to be a Goy Gadol as well. You too will have 12 sons, and there'll be princes, and so both will have Goy Gadol, great nation. But it's through Isaac that your seed will be called. Look at Genesis 21, Genesis 21 and verse 12. And I left my Genesis at the house, by the way, from Dr. Tabor. So I'll look at the Hebrew when I need it. But Genesis 21, 12. God said to Abraham, don't be distressed over the boy or your slave. Whatever Sarah tells you, do as she says, for it's through Isaac that your offspring shall be continued for you. But in Hebrew, it literally says it's in Isaac that your seed will be called, named. All right, so that will pass through Isaac, and that's something that we'll be watching as we work our way through. Now, central to the Isaac story and in the leading role, all right, when we talk about the cast of characters, the dramatis personae, the cast of characters of this particular story in the book of Isaac, the lead character is not Isaac. The lead character is Rebecca. Rebecca's front and center. She's the leading character, and I'm going to show you that. She's the one guiding the plan of God, not Isaac. If it were up to Isaac, he would have been satisfied with Esau. Esau's his son too, and it's Rebekah's son. We have a tendency, again, we want to make the ultimate hero the only good and the others are bad. So like when we have Abraham, Ishmael is the bad guy. That's what most people do with it. You have Ishmael. We have Isaac. Isaac is the one, not Ishmael. Ishmael represents those bad Arabs. That's what a lot of commentators do. They're from the same family. They're brothers. So I want you to quit thinking like that. Let's think biblically. You have Ishmael and you have Isaac. These are the two sons. And God blesses both, right? Now, it's through Isaac that he's got this plan that's working. He's still got a plan with Ishmael, too. Don't forget that. Then you go to Isaac. So, okay, now Isaac is, we're going to talk about this, has these two boys. They're twins. You got to look at both of them and what God says about both of them. All right, we're going to get to that. Now, I want to point out a couple other things. We're talking about Rebecca. Unlike Sarah and Rachel and Leah, other matriarchs in our story, Rebecca, is the only one who's confined to the book of Genesis. What do I mean by that? She's only mentioned in Genesis. Rebecca. Sarah, she's mentioned not only in Genesis, but elsewhere in the prophets. Right? Remember Isaiah 51, look to Abraham and to Sarah. You know, remember that? What about Rachel? Rachel is mentioned. She's mentioned in Jeremiah 31:15, a voice is heard in Ramah, bitter lamentation, weeping, Rachel weeping for her sons, for they are not. Leah is also mentioned elsewhere in the Bible. But guess what? And this is my point. Underline this in your notes. Rebecca is not. Rebecca, we only get her birth, but not her death. We get the death of Sarah, chapter 23 of Genesis. We get the death of Rachel. Remember, they're on their way. She dies at Beit Lechem Ephratah, Genesis 35. We get the death of Leah. With Leah and with Rebecca, and the question is going to be made clear later, why is it that we do get mention of their burial? So we know they died. It's not like a story like Enoch or Elijah. We do know they died, but it's only in passing. It's only in passing. We get a mention, and that's going to be very important. I'll close with that probably. So let's go back and look at Rivka. That's her name in Hebrew, Rebecca. We meet her well before the book of Isaac. Go with me to Genesis 22, Genesis 22, verse 20. Let me open up this too, because it's the commentary that I'm holding here is the Torah and Commentary by Richard Elliot Friedman. And I got a note this week, shout out to Scotty Higginbotham, asked me for a list of books for he and his family, and I'm gonna be writing something on that this week. But this is definitely one of them. The Torah, Commentary on the Torah by Richard Elliot Friedman. Genesis 22:20. I'm going to read from this. And it says, and it was after these things, and it was told to Abraham, saying, here, Milcah has given birth, she also, to sons for your brother Nahor. Uz, his firstborn, Buz, his brother, Kemuel, the father of Aram, Chesed, Hazo, Pildash, and Zidlaf, and Betuel. And Betuel fathered Rebekah. And Betuel fathered Rebekah. Then it says, Milcah gave birth to these eight from Nahor, Abraham's brother, etc. Now, the reason I bring that up, this mention to Abraham about the birth of family to his brother lets him know that there's a girl there, right? Now, am I extrapolating too much? I don't think so. He knows that there's a woman. She's probably about the right age. And this happens right after the Akedah, the binding of Isaac. Notice I'm in chapter 22. Right after we read the story of the binding of Isaac, we get this just piece of information. Abraham's told about some family, and there's a girl there. And then the next thing we read is what? Sarah's dead. Now, why is it at this point in the story? I'll tell you what I think. This is me. This is what I think. I think that it's to let us know, you who read these stories, understand, now that you know that the women are guiding the plan, before I tell you Sarah dead, I have to tell you there's another girl coming. Don't worry. God's got this. He's got the next woman ready to guide the plan. So we get that. Then we get the death of Sarah. It's as if the writer doesn't want us to know, doesn't want to leave any gap. There's no loss of continuity between the execution of the unfolding plan. Now, we would almost miss, in fact, some of us do, we read right over that and we don't even notice that that Rebekah's mentioned here. And we don't meet Rebekah for quite some time now. We have to read all through chapter 23 and the interaction to get the land at the cave of Machpelah. And then all of a sudden, then we get the story in chapter 24. But it's here. It's here that we learn about Rebekah, the daughter of Betuel. And here's the other interesting thing, at least to me. After the Akedah, I brought this up last week, the family is fragmented, as you can imagine. Now, people ignore this, so they miss this. It says clearly, Abraham goes to Beersheba. Isaac doesn't even come down the mountain with his dad, at least not according to the text. Next time we see him, he's in Be'er Lachai Roi, the well of the one who sees me. And guess where Sarah is? She's 30 miles from Abraham at Hebron. When it says that Abraham goes to mourn her, it literally says he has to go there. He's not outside the tent and the doctor comes out and says, I'm sorry, Abraham, she didn't make it. They have to send a messenger to get him is the way the story is presented. The family is split. As I mentioned, some even say that when word reached Sarah about this incident on Moriah, that's what takes her out. Who knows? Chapter 24. 24, to me, is one of the most beautiful stories in biblical literature. Because it demonstrates an unseen guiding hand moving on behalf of God's people to ensure that the plan comes to fruition. Now, we have an unnamed servant. We have an unnamed servant. Some believe this is Eliezer. We don't know that. We only do that because in Genesis 15, we know that Abram has a servant by the name of Eliezer of Damascus, but we don't know that because Genesis 24 doesn't give us a name. Unnamed servant. He's dispatched. Notice Abraham tells him he's going to go to Aram Naharaim, to the city of Nahor. Now, why is he going to send him to his brother's city? Why didn't he just say, look, all the girls in that area, you know, are good women. They breed them well there. No, he wants his family. He wants it from a specific group. And he knows from Genesis 22, verse 30 and following, that there's a girl there. Now, again, that's me. That's what I see in the text, but I see some things, so I think that's what he's doing. He sends his servant there. Now, notice the prayer. Look at chapter 24, chapter 24 and verse 12 of Genesis. This is the servant, by the way. I love this. The servant says in 24:12, and he said, Jehovah God of my Lord Abraham, he probably would have said El Shaddai, make something happen in front of me today and show kindness to my Lord Abraham. Here I am standing over the spring of water, and the daughters of the people of the city are going to draw water. Let it be that the girl to whom I'll say, tip your jar that I may drink, and she'll say, drink, and I'll water your camels too. She'll be the one you've pointed out for your servant, for Isaac, and I'll know by this that you've shown kindness to my Lord. Now, how many of you pray that specifically? I do. The first time I read this, I do this all the time. I'll say, El Shaddai, when I go into this place, I'm going to say this. If somebody says this, I'm going to know that. Why do I do that? Because of the biblical text. I love this. I love that the servant says, make something happen in front of me today. When I get up in the morning, I love to think about that very phrase. Hakrena lifnai hayom. Hakrena lifnai hayom. Make something happen in front of my face today. And that's a good thing, by the way. You want to specify. You want to be specific. Make it be good. I don't want just anything to happen. So he goes. He has this prayer. Now watch what happens. This is how this works. Look at verse 15. And he had not even finished speaking. He's still praying. And look. And here was Rebekah. I love the way it says it in Hebrew. He's not even finished praying. And it's like, and then she shows up. She shows up. And watch this. Here was Rebekah, who was born to Betuel, son of Milcah, wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, coming out. And her jar was on her shoulder. Look, like this. She's walking with her jar, like you see in your Sunday school books or in books about the ancient land of Israel. She's walking with her jar. And she, let's see. And the girl was very good looking. A virgin, and no man had known her. The storyteller wants us to know all this. The servant doesn't know any of this. This is the editor. This is the person who writing the story for us. And she went down to the spring. She fills her jar and went up. And the servant ran to her and said, give me a little water from your jar. Now, remember his prayer? He's like, okay, when I pray this and she says it, he's like this. He said, now watch this. And she says, drink, my Lord. He's hanging on every word. He's drinking, but he's listening. And lowered her jar on her arm and let him drink. And she finished letting him drink. And she said, I'll draw water for your camels too until they finish drinking. This is a good girl. You know you got the right woman if she's going to give water until your camels are tired of drinking. I love this story. And she hurries and empties her jar into the trough, runs again to the well, draws water. She drew for the camels, all his camels. And the man, astonished at her, was keeping quiet so as to know if Jehovah had made his trip successful or not. Well, it's pretty obvious that he did. As I mentioned last week, in some ways, Rebecca or Rivka is a female version of Abraham. Just like Abraham, he gets the call, he leaves sight unseen to a place unknown, and he's got this faith. You know what Rebecca does? She doesn't know. She's asked, will you come with me? You know, he tells the story. You read through 24 and he says, can I stay at your house? Yep, you can stay here. We have plenty of fodder. We can put you up. She brings him home. He's welcome in the home, and he tells the story. Y'all listen to this. I came here, and You know, it's pretty repetitive. It's a long story, Genesis 24. But she agrees to go with him, sight unseen, to a place unknown, and she does it, just like Abraham. I think a lot of people miss that. Rebecca is the key actor. She's not a supporting role in this story. She's the lead role. Rebecca is. I always get tickled when people don't recognize what the Bible does. This is ancient stuff, and it's showing the importance of women. It's not just Jewish literature either, Hebrew literature. The ancient Semitic world does this a lot more than people think. Okay, look at chapter 24, verse 60. They blessed Rebekah and said to her, "You're our sister. Become thousands of ten thousands, and may your seed possess the gate of those who hate him." All right. So she leaves with a blessing. This wraps up that story. I had to give this background because I wanted to draw more about Rebekah into our narrative. Then we get the death of Abraham and Ishmael, chapter 25. But you know what? That's out of place. Chronologically, it's out of place. It tells us in chapter 25 that Abraham dies at 175 and that Ishmael dies, and they're not dead yet. The stories, the reports of their death are exaggerated or highly overrated or whatever that saying is, because they're not dead, because now you have to go back in time when you get into Toledot, chapter 25, verse 19 and following, because now it's going to tell us Isaac is 40 years old when he takes Rebekah. Now, let me explain the math one more time if you missed it last week. So we know Abraham is 100 years old when Isaac is born. So if Isaac is 40, Abraham is 140. So the event where Rebekah is brought into to meet Isaac, Abraham's 140. He's still got 35 years left. He's not dead yet. And Ishmael's not dead either. He's got many years left. All right. But Rebekah, now we're going to read, here they are, Isaac is 40, he's got a woman, the plan has got to pass through him, and guess what? His woman is barren. Look at chapter 25, verse 21. Genesis 25, verse 21. And it says, "And Isaac prayed to Jehovah for his wife because she was infertile. And Jehovah was prevailed upon by him, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant." Now, how quick did that happen? So he's 40, he takes his woman, finds out she's infertile, and he goes to God with it. And we like to get our prayers answered by the morning, Monday at the latest, right? I mean, God's God, he can do anything. I want him to, let's go. But that's not what happens, is it? You know how long it is before she gets pregnant? It tells us. We don't have to guess. Look down at verse 26. And Isaac was 60 years old at their birth. 60. There's 20 years of Rebekah not being able to bear children, and Isaac. Now, why do we not have that image in our head? Because we don't read closely. It's 20 years. Now, it's Rebekah, by the way, who for the first time hears from God. Again, it's not the man in the story, Isaac, who hears from God first. It's Rebekah. She, look at chapter 25, verse 23. Now, let me just say this. Let me look at 22. 25, 22. "The children struggled inside her." She feels them fighting. Literally, the Hebrews, like they're fighting, crushing one another in her womb. Right? These two twins are fighting. And the children struggled inside her and said, if it's like this, why do I exist? And she went to inquire of Jehovah. Now, we don't get a lot about Rebecca, but look, here's when I read that, I see her doing like this. If it's like this, why do I even exist? She's dramatic. I'm not minimizing this raging battle inside of her, but you'll see later on she goes to extreme. If it's going to be like this and just, but she's passionate. Why I like these girls, these Bible girls. It's like this, why do I even exist? And Jehovah said to her, two nations are in your womb, two peoples will be dispersed from your insides. One people will be mightier than the other, and the older, the younger will serve. That's kind of strangely worded. A lot of translations say the younger, the older will serve the younger. But listen to what Friedman says about the Hebrew here. As I explained in another work, people have usually taken this to mean that Jehovah tells Rebekah that her younger son Jacob will dominate her older one, Esau. Some have thought, therefore, that Rebekah is not really manipulating the succession when she sends Jacob to pose as Esau. Rather, she's simply fulfilling God's will. Now, this could be true. I'm just giving you this comment. Listen to this. The decision of who is number one son, thus, is still God's. However, this understanding is based on a misunderstanding of the subtle, exquisitely ambiguous biblical wording. Watch. This is why you need to learn Hebrew. The text does not, in fact, say that the elder son will serve the younger son. The Hebrew, in biblical Hebrew, the subject may either precede or follow the verb, and the object, likewise, may either precede or follow the verb. What that means is that sometimes it's impossible to tell which word in biblical verse is the subject and which is the object. Especially if the verse is poetry. He says, this is poetry. Now listen what it can mean. Two options, perfectly acceptable in Hebrew. Now remember, Rebecca hears this from God. She hears it in Hebrew. The Hebrew can be translated, the elder will serve the younger. But it can also be heard, the elder, comma, the younger will serve. Which one? Now, the question is, she takes it. She understands this, that the elder will serve the younger, that the younger is the number one son. Oh, Jacob, the heel grabber, the supplanter, that's her boy. Esau, little hairy Esau, he's not. That doesn't mean she doesn't love him. I don't mean to imply, I don't want us to get that impression. I think she's probably a great mother. But I think a lot of times it says she favored Jacob. And Isaac favored Esau. Now we get that, we know that they're twins. By the way, the book of Malachi chapter 1, look there with me. Malachi chapter 1, and this has caused a lot of people to really think deeply. Malachi 1 verse 2. I have shown you love, says Jehovah, but you ask, how have you shown us love? After all, declares Jehovah, Esau is Jacob's brother. Now, this translation is really bad here. Yet I've accepted Jacob and have rejected Esau. Now, in Hebrew, it says, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. The Christian writings will take this even further and say, before the children were even born, it's in Romans chapter 9. Remember, Paul is saying that, you know, there is this selection going on, and they didn't have anything to do with it. And God favored Jacob over Esau, right? That's Paul's interpretation of this passage. But what we have here, what we do know is we have that there are twins. Jacob and Esau are twins. But they're not identical twins. They look different. They act different. They have different characteristics. They're different. They're two people. They represent two people in the womb. right? So you have Esau is red and hairy at birth. In English, you would call him Harry. That would be his name, Harry. And then you have Jacob, Yaakov, he who heals or supplants, usurps. He's latched on to the heel. Esau comes out first. He's grabbing hold because he's going to show in his life to fight for that firstborn right. Ultimately, he gets it. But anyway, he's grabbing hold of the heel. So you could call him heel, heel and hairy. And they come out, and they're different. Now, Jacob is smooth. He doesn't have all that red hair on him. He's a smooth man. We know that. It doesn't announce that at his birth. It doesn't say one was slick and smooth. But later, as you know in the story where he's going to be deceiving his father, and that's what he's doing, he's going to have to put on this is how hairy Esau was. He has to put on a jacket, like a fur jacket, so his daddy thinks he's Esau. Right? But he says, Mom, I'm a smooth man. I'm not going to be able to pull this over on Dad. And she's like, go get the fur jacket out of the closet. All right. So you've got Esau is a skillful hunter. He's an outdoorsman. He's got the smell of the woods. He smells like man. You know, he's got this manly pine cedars of Lebanon smell when he walks in. And then you've got Jacob, who says he hangs out in the house. He dwells in tents. House is not right. He's translated, it says he's a mild man who dwelled in tents. He's more of an inside. Doesn't mean he's soft or not manly. Just means that he's not like his brother. They're different. Now, by the way, where it says that he is a mild man or however it's translated, in Hebrew the word there is tam. It's translated blameless or whole, complete, right? So we have the Bible tells us that Noah was tamim in his generation. Abraham is, and that's in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 9. And then in chapter 17, verse 1 and 2, God tells Abraham, walk after me and be tamim, be perfect. Here we read that Jacob is tamim. We also get that in Job, chapter 1, verse 1, chapter 1, verse 8, chapter 2, verse 3. Job, who has considered my servant Job? He's tam, perfect. He's blameless in this generation, right? Now, we have a series of stories that follow that some will lead some to love Jacob and excuse all of his bad behaviors and say, well, Esau had it coming to him because God, I mean, after all, God hated him, I should too. So that's the way people think about this story. But I want you to let the story move you. When you read the story, like I read the story where Jacob tricks Esau, you know, it's easy to see, you go, well, Esau's a glutton, you know. He's like, I'll trade my birthright. Just give me a bowl of that soup there, buddy. You can have anything. I'm just hungry. He's definitely got some issues, right? But let's think about this. I want you to understand that the writer wants you to feel this way. I'm just giving you a little bridle here for things that follow, not only here, but in the Exodus story and in the prophets. Hang on. Don't overreact to the writer. He's just a brilliant writer. So remember, Jacob, you know what Jacob's first words are? According to the text, no, not mama, a dada. His first words are, give me that birthright. The writer wants you to say, Jacob, his whole life is about taking the birthright and the blessing. Esau, basically, his first words are, give me that soup. He's sort of I want what's mine now, whereas Jacob is more strategic. You see, I want you to get the better picture of the boys, if you will. Now, the deal is made. In chapter 25, verse 31, Esau makes the deal. He trades the bowl of pottage for the birthright. The deal is made, and we read that Esau despises the birthright. Now, in chapter 26 of Genesis, The next thing we run into is the story, one of the main glimpses we get of the life of Esau. And by the way, if you read 25, you know that you've got Jacob and Esau there, but 26 seems out of place. We don't mention anything about Jacob and Esau until very end, and it's in another section of the text. But chapter 26 seems out of place, but we do get this. I did want you to look at this. Chapter 26, verse 2, Jehovah appeared to him, who? Isaac, and said, "Don't go down to Egypt. Reside in the land that I say to you. Stay on this land, and I'll be with you and bless you, for I'll give all these lands to you and your seed, and I'll uphold the oath that I swore to Abraham your father. And I'll multiply your seed like the stars of the skies and give to your seed all these lands, and all the nations of the earth will be blessed through your seed." Why? Because, I added why, because Abraham listened to my voice and kept my watch, my commandments, my laws, and my instructions. Now, a lot of people, commentators and apologists want to say that Abraham kept the Torah, you know, because it says, and you literally what it says is, he listened, Abraham, to my voice, he listened and guarded my guarded things, whatever that is in the time of Abraham. It's certainly not the law of Sinai, right? It's not, it hadn't happened yet. Even though some commentators want to make it that early, it's not. They didn't know. And then my commands and my statutes and my Torah. Well, that's not talking about what you think it is. These words have meaning in the ancient world, and they don't need to imply the five books of Moses. You know, can you imagine Abraham is going, well, it looks like we're going to have to trim this piece of fat off because it says in Leviticus he didn't have it, right? So don't try to make it like he did. Okay, but he does show obedience to the things that God wants to be guarded and protected, his instructions, his commands that he's aware of at that time. But we get through the story of 26, which shows some overlap with the life of Abraham, which I mentioned earlier. But then we mention only in verse 34, look at chapter 26, Genesis 26 and verse 34. And Esau was 40 years old, and he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri, and the Hittite, and Basmat, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and they were a bitterness of spirit to Isaac and to Rebekah. Okay, Esau's now 40. Remember, the story starts with Isaac as 40. Now he's had, he was 60 when Esau was born. So now Isaac is 100. When Isaac is 100, we don't know how old Rebekah is. She could have been considerably younger than Isaac. We don't know. We know now that at 100, Esau is 40, and he takes on some of these Hittite girls. And Rebekah and Isaac don't like it. Now, who are the Hittite girls? They're not from Anatolia. They're from the daughters of the sons of Chet. They're the people in the neighborhood, the Canaanites, that Abraham bought the plot of land for, the cave of Machpelah, to put away the dead from his sight. It's the local girls. And Rebekah doesn't like this, these Hittite women. Now we move to chapter 27. I'm going to move through this quickly. In chapter 27, Isaac is old and he's blind. How old is he? Remember, he dies at 180, right? Well, he's not 180 because he doesn't die until Genesis 35, 27 through 29. And guess what? That's 10 chapters from now. There's a lot that has to happen. Now, the last thing we read is that at 40, he's 100. So does he lay in bed old and blind for 80 years? I don't know. We'll have to come back to that. But there's another food story. Here's another food story. And a trick, by the way. Isaac, Jacob has already tricked his brother for the birthright with a bowl of soup, and now we have a common theme being established, another food story. This time, Isaac says, Esau, come here, son. You know how I love the way you cook that backstrap. I want you to go out and get me this piece of meat, and you do it the way you do it, and Rebecca's listening in, right? You know the story. Now, again, pay attention. People often use this story, and they're apologists on behalf of Jacob. They apologize, they excuse his behavior, and they denigrate Esau, because that's the way they think they're supposed to act. But you know what the Bible doesn't do? The Bible doesn't tell you to act like that. You're doing that on your own. The Bible wants you to recognize that the thing that Isaac does, here's what we say. We say, well, Rebecca heard from God. The older will serve the younger, so she's got to move in and do this because the blessing is coming. Okay, you're okay to think that, right? You can think that, but be careful. Be careful. It still doesn't excuse Jacob in this. In fact, the writer knows we're going to think that. You know what the writer says? He has Jacob tell us, Mom, I don't know. So if Jacob says, I don't know, I'm going to get a curse out of this. This doesn't say, he's going to know, Mom. He's going to feel my little smooth arm. He's going to know I'm not hairy. She's like, I got that. I'll even take the curse for you. This is a plot. It's a plan. Now, we can say that it's because God is on their side, like the Dylan song. Or we can say, let's see. Let's follow this through. Now, I know some of you are like, well, I want to keep thinking like that. Well, the reason I bring this up is if we allow the Bible to speak for itself and think like we normally think, like this is a trick they're playing on the old blind man. This is a trick. It is a trick. You know why you get that gut feeling that says it's a trick they're playing on the old blind daddy? Because that's exactly what it is. Now, if you don't excuse that and dismiss it and say, I can't think that because God wants me to side with Jacob here, what are the stories that we read about Jacob later? Guess what? He pays for these things. As he was the tricker, he becomes the tricked. Now, if you've already excused him and dismissed that out of your mind, then you don't get the benefit of the stories. You don't understand that when Jacob meets Laban, he's met his match. Let the Bible speak. Let the Bible speak and you and I be quiet and read. Because what's going to happen is, through maturity and forgiveness, great lessons are learned by studying the lives of these characters. Jacob, at his mother's bidding, takes the blessing intended for Esau. The father wants to bless Esau, not Jacob, not with this blessing. Now, the language can be subtle. I'm going to throw this at you. I want you to pay close attention here, how subtle this is. Do you know that some of the words that Isaac speaks to Jacob, he uses the same Hebrew words to Esau? But the slightest subtlety, watch this. Look at Genesis 27, verse 28 and 29. Genesis 27, 28 and 29. May God give you from the dew of the skies and from the fat of the earth and from much grain and wine. May people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be your brother's superior, and may your mother's sons bow to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed. That's what he tells Jacob. Now, look at what he tells Esau, 27 verse 39. He said to him, here, away from the fat of the earth will be your home, and from the dew of the skies from above, you'll live by your sword, and you'll serve your brother. And it will be that when you get dominion, you'll break his yoke from your neck. You say, well, that isn't anything alike, Ross. Ah, but in the Hebrew, they both have from the fatness of the earth and from the dew of heavens. But the subtle thing makes all the difference. For Jacob, he's going to benefit from the fatness of the earth and from the dew of heaven. And Esau, he's going to be away from the fatness and the dew. You see? But the phrase is the same in Hebrew. It's very subtle. Now, one, it's a blessing and a benefit. But what I want you to see is that Jacob, is purposely presented as a trickster. You shouldn't take that out of the story. His name, for God's sake, is Trickster. The writer wants us to read it and go, Jacob. He's one who usurps. Esau, after this second deal, he said, I want to kill him. And Rivka hears this, so she devises a plan. Genesis 27, verse 41. Esau despised Jacob. Remember, he despised the birthright. Now he despises his brother. Because of the blessing with which his father blessed him, and Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning for my father will be soon, and I'll kill Jacob, my brother." Are they soon? Not at all. He's got a long time to let this stew, right? Not to use a pun, but you know how Esau likes stew. In verse 42, the words of Esau, our older son, were told to Rebekah. She sent and called to Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Here, Esau, your brother, consoles himself regarding you with the idea of killing you. Now, listen to my voice. Get up, flee to Laban, my brother at Haran. Live with him for a number of days until your brother's fury will turn back, until your brother's anger turns back from you, and he forgets what you did to him." That's going to be a while, right? "And I'll send and take you from there. Why should I be bereaved of two of you as well in one day?" And Rebekah said to Isaac, look at this. She's like this. "I'm disgusted with my life because of the daughters of Chet. If Jacob takes a wife from the daughters of Chet, like these daughters of the land, why do I even have life?" See, we only get a couple of glimpses at Rebekah. She's like, if this is good, pregnancy is going to be like this. I don't even want to. If he's going to marry, that's just the way I view her. I'm sorry. But the idea is that she's brilliant. She's gutsy. She's bold. And she's going to make sure that her plan, as she understands God's plan, comes to pass. Get it. Go, 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 Jacob, go. He's going to kill you. I'll call for you. And then Isaac called Jacob and he blessed him. He tells him the same thing. May El Shaddai bless you. There's some truth in writing there where the patriarchs referred to God by El Shaddai. This is one of the earlier texts and it's confirming that. El Shaddai bless you and make you fruitful and multiply. And he sends him to Padan Aram. Now, get this. We never read any more about Rebekah. We don't know. Rebekah doesn't call Jacob back. I guess she's dead. We just don't know. What we do know is, according to the text, Jacob will never see his mother again alive. She saved him. She made sure he was safe. She got him out. She got him, helped him get the blessing. She got Dad in on it. You know, they worked together to get Jacob safe. And then her role is done. Now, we never read any more about them meeting, but look at Genesis 49. I want to show you something telling. Genesis 49, verse 29. This is Jacob on his deathbed. "And he commanded them and said to them, 'I'm being gathered to my people. Bury me to my fathers, to the cave that's in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that's in the field of Machpelah, which faces Mamre, in the land of Canaan as Abraham bought the field of Ephron the Hittite as a possession for a tomb. There they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. There I buried Leah, the field, etc., etc. Now, let me point something out. Evidently, he was not there when his mother was buried. Why? He says, there they buried Isaac and his wife, Rebekah. Interestingly enough, he also doesn't say, my father, Isaac, my mother, Rebekah. It's like he's distanced himself. Probably had to. Can you imagine, you know, you're not there when your mother dies? But we're going to see more of this story as it unfolds. Evidently, though, they buried his mother. As the story called Ele Toledot Isaac continues, Jacob is on his way to Paddan Aram. What awaits him? A series of life lessons. He's going to reach maturity, physically, of course, but spiritually and intellectually as well. He never sees his mother again. But we know that Rebekah acted on the word that she heard from God. And based on that word, it drove her very actions. She made sure that she advanced her son, her favored son, just like Sarah had done before. She's not mentioned outside of Genesis. Rivka heard God say, whether it was supposed to be this way or not, she heard that the elder would serve the younger. And you know what she did? She made sure of it. Rebecca is the lead actor in the story thus far. It's because of the women in these stories that God's plan is carried on to the next chapter. And we're going to get into that next chapter next week. Don't miss it. Shabbat Shalom, Shavua Tov.